Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
I'm delighted we can spend some time together today, and I'm especially going to try to make this a very, very worthwhile. I think you're going to love our guest. This is going to be a very worthwhile bit of time. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is Miles Edward Allen. He's a friend of mine. He's a lifelong researcher in the field of the afterlife. I have to tell you right off the bat, this book that he has written has blown my mind. It's called Astral Intimacy. Now, I spent decades researching what we've learned from the dead in the period before about 1950. I read a lot of the community, everything I could get my hands on that was a communication from the dead. And what I then just put it in my head and eventually wrote The Fun of Dying. What Miles has done is to take 50 communications received up until the year 2001 and annotate all the little bits of them, take them out, and put them under headings in one book. So if you've read The Fun of Dying, or if you haven't read The Fun of Dying, and you're curious to know something about this or that aspect of the afterlife, this book is about much more than do they have sex, although we will talk about that. But this book is about what people do in the afterlife, what it's like, how they feel. One of the things we discover as we do this research is that the people in the afterlife are just us, basically. They're living in a place very similar to this place and yet in some ways so different. But they're not automatically enlightened. They're not better or stronger than we are, and they don't know everything. So sometimes two dead people will disagree about some detail, and all of that is part of the joy of doing research. And my friend Miles has just written a winner. It's called Astral Intimacy, and we're going to get into it now. But first, Miles, welcome. And tell me, how did you ever get started doing this? We all have a story.
Well, hi, Roberta, and thanks for having me on. The story is probably longer than anybody wants to listen to. I started off as a secular humanist in high school and college, and ran into a book one day called How to Make ESP Work for You, which is by Harold Sherman. I took it home thinking I would have a great fun making fun of it. So I started to read it, and when I got done with it, I said to myself, well, either this man is the greatest liar of all time, or there must be something to this stuff.
Yeah.
And that started me reading, and ever since then, which is a long time ago, I've been reading more and more.
So you did the same thing I did. This is the story everybody that I've spoken with who's done this research has, which is that something happens. And then that, you sort of pull on that because you're curious, and it's like a tugged string. It brings more and more and more and more information. And the more you learn, the more you want to learn. And with you, as with me, it happened really in childhood. So that's fun and that's exciting. And I know you've written a series of books talking about these topics. Just briefly, what are those books that you've written before Astral Intimacy?
Well, I started off about three decades ago, I put together a pamphlet of what Xerox, cut and paste stuff. I mean, really, scissors and paste. This was before the internet and computers. What I had thought were the most convincing examples of cases of proof of life after death. I did it for a colleague, a guy who worked with me, who was an atheist, and a Mensa, and a PhD in this and that, and who thought he knew everything.
Did you convince him?
No. In fact, I learned a great lesson from his response. He took about 1 hour. He looked at it. Maybe it was 10 minutes. He looked at it. He made a few nasty comments on the first couple of pages, and then handed it back to me and said, "No, I'm not going to bother reading this junk."
That's the problem.
Everyone has a belief system. That was typical of what's happened a lot of times since.
This has been a frustrating time. Because people, until very recently, Everyone has had a closed mind about this. Science is right, or my religion is right. And when people who have done this research would sort of say, well, wait a minute, there's a whole lot neither of them looks at, new stuff you might want to see. As you found, and as I've found until very recently, there was no interest. So, but you wrote a compendium, which I own, and I just cannot recall the title of it.
Well, after I retired, then I went back and looked at that, and I decided that I could actually do something with it. 90% of it was thrown in the trash, but there's a couple of cases that are left. I wrote a book called The Survival Files.
Yes, that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah,
and that was subtitled "The Most Convincing Evidence Yet Compiled for the Survival of Your Soul."
That's the one that I'm thinking of, and it was very well received by people who know what they're talking about, and a very excellent book for anyone to read who wants to dive in depth into this information.
I'm extremely pleased with the results of that, and I got a lot of great comments from a lot of very important people to me.
Yes, I'm sure you did.
And the whole thing was done in a dialogue style, it makes it different from many books. It's a young man going up to a cabin in the Appalachians, talking to an older gentleman and they discussed the various evidence for life after death.
One of the things that we're learning is that everybody has a different approach to trying to understand this stuff. So to have there be a variety of ways people can do it, I think, is important. And what Miles does is to respect your intelligence and give you a lot of evidence. As I say, as you'll see when we get into astral intimacy, there's a lot of stuff in first person from dead people, which I think many people want to hear. A more substantial version of the same thing would be The Survival Files, which is his other major book. What I did with The Fun of Dying is something totally different. I distilled what we had learned and gave it to people in a very simple way that you can read in an evening, and then gave you the bibliography that can support everything that I've said. Everybody has a different way of approaching this. I think it's just important to approach it because it's true. And because it's true, if you're starting to study this information now, you're going to be ahead of your friends when suddenly it's on the evening news every night. And that will happen in this century and probably in the first quarter of this century, which is very exciting.
If I may say, I think it's not only because it's true. There's a lot of things that are true. Calculus is true, but
calculus is true.
Need to know about it. But the thing is, to me, is that if everyone, imagine a world in which everyone had a solid feeling and a pretty clear idea of what was going to happen to them after their death in the next world.
And see, you and I think alike because it would change everything. Fear of death is the base fear. When we no longer fear death, we no longer fear anything, including the mortgage payment, including certainly things like illness or war. It makes you lose fear. And when people don't fear, and when people know that the people that they love are eternal, and that they are eternal, you can't die. It is not possible for your mind to die. When people know that, you're so right, Miles. It changes everything. And the things we most find scary in our world right now would disappear like smoke. They would be gone. So that's a very worthy reason.
Yeah, it would be hard to be a terrorist if you knew that, you know?
Yes. And some of the reports, although that's another podcast, some of the reports about the experiences terrorists are receiving who thought they were going to get 70 virgins, some of them are funny and some of them are tragic, but none of them involved 70 virgins there for use, even though apparently, according to Miles, we do have sex in the afterlife.
Yeah, right, 70 virgins is about one of the scariest hells I could think of.
I guess I never appreciated the charm. I just assumed it must be there, but perhaps you're right. That would be, imagine 70 nags telling
please.
You to take out the garbage. Right, that's true. But in reality, we can know to a really an amazing extent what's true about the afterlife, about living there, about the kinds of just pastimes people have, the sports. What are the sports they do there? What are those outdoor activities they do?
pretty much the same thing they do here. It's a great quote from, I think it's the Betty book many years ago, in which someone asked the spirit, do you have games there? Do you play games? And the answer was, of course we play games. We're human.
Right. That's true. That's true. I should stress, again, something that was probably one of the last things that I knew for certain. Because most of what I was reading was very early 20th century communications through deep trance mediums. A lot of great evidential stuff, really good detail. But nobody thought to say, is it solid there? So it took me a very long time to get to the point of beginning to find the people saying essentially what she said about sports. You know, well, is it solid there, Grandpa? Of course it's solid. You know, it's more solid than where you are now. And then when you suddenly start to see these people giving that answer, it is so tremendously reassuring, don't you think? And it's all right here.
Yeah. That's what they say. Yeah, it's all right here.
I've talked in other podcasts about how that's possible. I'll just say very briefly now that if the easiest way to envision where the afterlife is to think about all the fact that there's are all these TV channels. The signals are in your room where you are sitting. If you don't have a TV, you aren't going to pick up the television. If you do have a TV, you can turn it on, and you can turn it to channel 2, and it will pick up a reality. Right now, your mind is tuned to this level of reality and to that body on this level of reality, which is why you think you're in it. When you die, all that happens is that your mind, like a TV, tunes to this higher vibratory rate, and there, which is like a radio signal, a higher radio signal or television signal. And there it picks up a whole new, different, solid reality. And there are multiple levels of afterlife reality at higher and higher rates, channels, if you will. Isn't that right, or would you put it somewhat differently, Miles?
I've never been a fan of talking about frequencies because I don't quite understand what it is that's supposed to be vibrating. But yes, generally you're right, and I have used the analogy of the TV stations myself, and the idea that it's not one thing is important. There is a multiplicity of places you might go when you die, and that's why we get some very different descriptions sometimes.
I think that that's an important point to make. There seems to be a core afterlife reality, which is very culturally dependent. So if you die in a different part of the world, you'll be experiencing something different from what you'd experience when you first arrived from say, North America or Great Britain, which are the two that I'm most familiar with. But in addition, as you point out, Miles, there are other sort of off-track places where people can go because our minds are so powerful. We can generate or be attracted to a reality which is not sort of the central heaven, if you will, or the central summerland. I love that you use that same term. I think that's becoming more and more in general use for the area that we enter at death. But it appears, based on several different kinds of evidence, that each of the 6 or 7 or however many levels we enter at death, and opinions vary, each of them seems to be the size of the universe or close to it. They're huge. It's much less crowded there than it is here. And people will say that. Don't they say that to you too? It must be crowded, Miles. Think of all the people who have died.
Oh, I don't know. I think there's far... Yes, it's not crowded. But I would say there are far more souls in the universe than have ever been living on Earth.
Yes, that's certainly true, which is even makes it even more astounding that it's not crowded there. And people remark about that sometimes who have just graduated.
And my understanding is that they're constantly making more, too. I think souls are
being
born.
Isn't that an interesting point? I've seen that as well. I haven't seen enough of that information to be sure about it, but you're pretty confident that new beings continue to be started even today.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like a Hindu, but there is a cycle that I think souls go through. They are somehow. Oh wow, the analogy gets sort of complex. I like to talk about computer networks, but you get a little piece of God broken off and becomes a soul, and it becomes independent for a while, and it goes through various experiences, various places, and then ultimately it merges back in to the mainframe, if you will, and all of that knowledge that it has gained over the years becomes part of God's knowledge, and that's actually why, if you will, God is doing this. And I don't want to sound religious either, because I have no other terminology, so I have to say God and He, but it and whatever.
Yeah, I would say mind and it for
so
that reason.
So that it can experience Himself.
That's, I think, what many people believe. I haven't yet formed an opinion for certain about why this is happening. I guess partly because it's not important to me now to know that. But it's for sure true that we go through multiple lifetimes ourselves. The evidence is that all of our lifetimes happen at the same time, because there is no time outside of this level of reality. And I don't understand that at all. A lot of the things here I don't understand.
I don't understand it. I don't buy it. Not for a second.
Well, that's it. Yeah, you and I are somewhat different. I'm open-minded, but I try to be not so open-minded.
Well, I'm open-minded,
that my brain
too. Everything I say has, you know, there's a certain percentage. I never say never, and I can't be certain. I'm just saying what is most likely in my mind at the time.
So let's talk about, well, first, let me just take a break and say this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I have two books out on these topics, The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch. Both of them have bibliographies that contain many books, to which this new book, Astral Intimacy, will definitely be added, which allow you to research the afterlife on your own. I don't think you should take my word for it, or Miles's word for it, or the word of the 50 people who communicated from the afterlife and helped him write this wonderful book. Beginning in the 1800s and up to 2001, 50 different accounts from the afterlife, all taken apart, and what the people said on each of many, many topics. There's a three-page table of contents. What do they say about this? What do they say about that? You can find it all in this book. That's just, to me, a monumental effort all by itself. But there are about 70 books in the bibliographies of my books, which I have read, annotated, and I'm telling you which ones are most useful if you're curious about this or that. So it's an opportunity for you to do your own research. As I say, don't trust us. Instead, trust all the millions and millions of people who have died, many of whom, more than it's hard, I can't imagine how many have communicated with us in one way or another and are doing that today. And the reason it is so many is that there are a lot of them who are communicating just with their loved ones. I hear all the time now from people who have read my books, and they tell me what grandpa or their mother or whoever is doing in their lives. Those all count toward building up this certainty that our lives are eternal and that love goes on. And what I want to do now is talk with Miles about that very thing. Now, I'm aware that the reason it says on the front of your book, the title of, in fact, your name is not even on the front of your book. Instead, it just says Astral Intimacy. 50 spirits speak about life, love, and sex after death.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? 50,
I was actually
50
going
spirits
to just
speak about life,
book.
Love, and sex after death. You talk about a lot more than that in here. And
well,
yet that's
life.
What... Yes. Yeah, you do.
Life
talk
covers
about
a
life.
Lot, but you know, I started off. I was going to just title it "Sex After Death" and other intriguing prospects. But Mike Tim talked me out of that. he thought it was a little too much.
I think one of the things it's important for us to say right at the start is that the weirdness we have about our bodies doesn't exist in the afterlife as much as I've been able, or I think you have been able to find. The taboos about sex are not there. It's just another one of an infinite number of pleasures we have after our death. There is no marriage there, or it's not, certainly if you're married here, as Jesus said, that marriage is dissolved. You can stay together, many do, or you can go on and enjoy other people and other lives and other pleasures. It's a place which is not judgmental and which is not moralistic. Now, would you disagree with any of that, Miles?
I think the summer land that you're speaking of is, that would be a fairly good description, yes. I also think, though, that people, when they die, as you said earlier, they don't automatically become wise. They don't automatically become all-knowing or particularly smarter, and nor do they particularly lose their previous beliefs. There are still a lot of people who are clinging to their old religions, and that lasts for maybe a century or so before they finally figure out that that's not the truth.
That's an interesting point.
If you had a lot of moral taboos, you might carry those with you for a while.
That's an important point. One of the reasons to learn these truths now is to try to free yourself from what are earthly strictures and taboos, to free your mind, to free your psyche and your spirit from be feeling constrained by religious moralisms that simply are not of God, they are instead of man. And one of the ways we know that for sure is they don't exist after death. So that's a very important point. Learning these truths, and that's another reason to read Astral Intimacy, because learning what it's really like there helps to free you from misunderstandings that you've been given and unnecessarily sort of judgmental aspects of our lives that have been ingrained in us by religions and even by the law, by the secular world. So, all right, people love one another here, and I've been married 42 years, so I know what it is to have a loving, long-term relationship, and so do you. I know your wife, Donna, and you've been married many years. So tell us now what happens when people, based on your research, when people first die, usually it's the husband, but sometimes the wife, how do they proceed when they're first there? They've got other friends and loved ones around them, but they're pining for their spouse.
Well, they may sleep a long time. They may rest a while. They may take a while to get used to where they are. But once they do, they usually become aware of what's still happening on Earth. They have seem to have the ability to monitor their loved ones and to know when their loved ones are thinking of them.
I think that's another important point. People have asked me, one woman said, I was doing a radio show, someone's radio show, and there were call-ins, and a woman called in and said, can my husband tell what I'm thinking? And I said, probably yes. And she said, that's not good. So that told me there was probably something she was hoping she could keep from him. I think people should know that our thoughts in general are not as private as we thought they were, if only because each mind is part of eternal mind. In essence, there's only one mind, and each of our minds is part of that. So I see you stress in Astral Intimacy, or the people that you quoted stress, that there's an effort to give us privacy. We shouldn't think that we're wearing a neon sign on the top of our head that anyone can read that says what we're thinking, but we need to assume that our thoughts are not hidden. Our thoughts are to a considerable extent open, especially if they're thoughts of other people, because they act to some extent like beacons, right? People tune into them. If we are thinking often of our husband or our other loved ones who have died, they will tune into that.
Yes, you get some. There are some varying opinions of that. We're not. The universe does not always tell us the same thing. But
right.
I think the consensus would be, or at least the majority thought would be, that you can't read another person's thoughts unless the person projects those thoughts. And really, it's like if you're thinking of a loved one, they will know it. But if you thinking of scratching an itch, they're not going to know it. I mean,
right. I think you're right about that. But I don't know how far that goes.
It's hard to see. You're getting into a detail which might be different on different levels.
Yeah.
Ultimately, of course, you're right. There is that mainframe computer that knows that sort of we're all part of.
Yes, mainframe computer, you think in technical terms. But however, just speaking in general, however you can think of it, if Miles's analogy to all being attached to a mainframe computer, if that's a helpful way to think of the way our minds work, I think that's a good one. I have never thought of it that way. I think of it more as just our minds being organically part of eternal mind. And yet we have our own, of course, separate awareness. And that awareness seems to be eternal for practical purposes. It doesn't seem to be something that didn't exist long before we were born into these bodies and will continue to exist for practical purposes forever. Although ultimately, apparently, we merge with the source. I had an existential crisis when I did A Course in Miracles, which I think a lot of people do because it's meant to help you kill the ego, and your ego fights. And my anxiety became that when I merged with the source, I would be extinguished. Now, this is akin to worrying about when the universe ends, because this is, for practical purposes, far, far away in the future, but I worried about it. And I thought about it a lot, and it scared me. Then one morning, I woke up, and the thought in my mind was, you will never lose awareness. You will have God's awareness. And I thought, oh, I don't know where that came from. I'm assuming it was a guide, but I've never worried again, and I've never had to fight ego issues since then. So we don't know for sure. There are a lot of things we don't know, but it's exciting to learn more and more about them. And the reason we can learn more and more about them is that there is a real there. This is real stuff. This is not what some religion thought of or some particular figure thought of. But Miles and I and many others are trying to understand, based on many witnesses and much, much evidence, what really is going on. That's why we call this podcast Seek Reality.
Well,
so, all right, we're getting closer. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, think in terms of just your own life as you grow older. You know, at one time you were 7 years old. You had certain thoughts and feelings and whatever. Did that person die? You don't have those. You have some memories of those now. You're so much more than you were then. Okay, so when you die, when you ultimately, as they say, whatever the word is, merge, it's not a question of losing the identity. It's a question of gaining the reality. It's a question of realizing being a part of the whole doesn't mean that you lost the part.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. We're going through a whole period here of very rapid growth. We'll have consolidation, as we did maybe at 7. We'll have consolidation of our spiritual growth when we are back in the Summerland, which is our true home. That's where we spend most of eternity, are the Summerland and the other areas around it. And we are still the same person, but we're growing. We're becoming stronger. We're becoming smarter, hopefully, and growing spiritually, which is the thing for which we all really hunger when we're there. So that's a good point. This is just part of what is a very long process for eternity. So, all right, so there we are. We are people who have died and been reunited. And the evidence is strong that all of the feelings, all of the love is still there, and probably in a way which is easier for us to live with and express, because we don't have the issues we had when we were here. If your husband has this or that bad habit, he cuts his toenails in front of the television, whatever he does. All of those sort of earth issues are gone, and instead what we have is the glory, the joy of being together again and knowing that it's eternal.
So, what if you have three wives?
Well, that's an interesting point. My mother-in-law had, her husband died when my father was, her husband died when my husband was 5, and she remarried, and she asked me, if she was getting to the age when it was her turn to go, who's my husband there? I've had 2 of them. And I said, I think you don't have to have either, or you can have one, or you can have both. It'll be up to you. And later, when I communicated with her after her death, I asked her who she had chosen, and she had chosen the more recent one. She said she had seen her first husband, but she and he had got grown apart, and it was nice that he was there, but she was staying with the second. But that's a great point. What have you learned on that topic of what happens if you've had several spouses?
Well, I would say exactly that. The question is, where is the love the strongest? Where are the personalities the most compatible? It may be none. You may have three wives or three husbands and decide that you didn't like any of them after all.
Yeah, it's time to start over.
That's fine,
that's
too.
Right.
You know, I hate to be, in a way, we're all part of this one mind, as you say. And so we should never be lonely, and we should never feel that we're by ourselves. On the other hand, there is the point that we are individuals, and we will always be those individuals. We cannot permanently meld with any other one, and without, we retain our individuality, and
yes.
It's we have our own life to live. And we, at some point, you'll probably go off and do your own thing for a while, because the what you're calling Summerland, to me, I think is only the first stop. There are many levels of beyond that of spiritual development, if you will, or growth or experience. And who knows what that's like? I mean, we only have the vaguest hints about.
Eventually,
what
they
would be
stop
like
communicating
then.
With us unless they deliberately intend to communicate, which is why at some point we'll have Carol and Mikey on. Mikey is, I believe, he actually is a sixth level being who wanted to bring the truth to the world in a better form than it had been brought till then. So he was born about almost 30 years ago now, lived 20 years, and died, and has been communicating through his mother. And he told his mother he would have had no comprehension of how to talk to people if he hadn't done that repeat Earth lifetime, which was purely optional for him. He didn't need to do it, but he did it in order to be able to communicate. And I think that's typical of what we hear from upper-level beings. Or if they do communicate, Miles, they sound so weird to us, so sort of formal and as if they really have forgotten how people think.
Yes, and the transmission is tough too. You lose a lot, and it could be influenced a lot. And that's why it's important to have a lot of different sources.
Yes.
And get a consensus thereof, because any time a message comes through, it's bound to be somewhat distorted by the medium that it comes through. And it's difficult. It's very difficult for them. They have to have mediums on the other side, too, as I understand
yeah.
it. So it's a multi-stage process to get any information across. Anybody who ever played that game Telephone, where you whisper something
yes.
in somebody's ear and
yes.
pass it
That's
along
true.
Knows how difficult it is to get the truth. So only by consensus, only by looking at a lot of different sources, and then sort of saying, okay, where's the common ground here? Can you get on, we hope, the truth?
All right, let's talk a little bit about sex. This is not a moral issue there. It's not an issue of any. You don't have to have a certain partner or one partner. There doesn't seem to be anything like that associated with it. This is something I've studied to some extent, so I'll weigh in too. But first, the first question is: Are we anatomically complete, Miles, when we're there? These new bodies we have, which are young and gorgeous, do they have the appropriate equipment to even have sex?
All right. First of all, our bodies are the bodies that we have been growing all our life here. We have what we call an astral body. It begins anew when we're born in the physical world. It grows with the physical body. Again, I sound like I'm saying absolutes. This is what I think is true. Okay.
Yeah.
It grows with the astral with the physical body, and when you die, the astral body leaves, or the physical body leaves the astral, depends on how you look at it, and you exist now in what is called an astral body. It's the body that you've been living in all along, only you just didn't realize it was there because it was covered up by your physical body. So then as you age, as time goes by in the spirit world, your spirit begins to mold the astral body into that form that you most appreciate. You may have been 35, you may have been 40, you may have been 22, whatever it is you like the best, that's what you start looking like.
Yeah.
Because that's where your mind forms it.
And
at that stage, yes, you are anatomically correct.
Okay, good.
Put it in a Barbie doll form.
Yeah. Yes. But that's what I had also come to surmise. And this body that we have, which is anatomically correct, is capable of having sex the way people have it here, right?
It would seem that is true, yes. Particularly on what you might call the lower levels of when you're really into the astral forms. As you develop further, you gain various abilities. You gain the ability to travel by thinking about it, for example. You gain the ability to move through walls that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. You learn how to do these various things, and one of the things, apparently, that you learn is how to merge with another being.
And yes, this is the juicy part. Okay, talk about that.
Sex becomes so much more than simply a penetration. It becomes a penetration in a way, a merging of the whole bodies and the mind, so that you become suddenly part of that being for a while, so that you understand them on a much deeper level. And apparently it's quite a thrill.
People who have talked about this merging of your bodies, which has nothing to do apparently with sex. It doesn't involve genitals at all. It involves a whole body merger. People who have talked about it talk about it as an ecstatic, infinitely pleasurable thing to do. When I've asked Mikey the question, because here's a guy who died at 20. He was just a raging, you know, nothing but hormones, obviously at 20 in a young man. He said no one there has any interest in sex. I asked him why, and he said it was because, A, there's no need to procreate, which seems to be part of our sex drive. This need not, I guess, to have our genes survive doesn't exist there. But he said there's so much more to do that's pleasurable. And he said there is this thing you can do if you want to do it. And it seems to be something people do for a while. And then even that, there's more pleasurable stuff that's spiritual, I guess, than that. But he said when you combine the fact that we don't have a sex drive with the fact that there's so much more to do and there's this glorious merger, spiritual merger people can do, he said nobody bothers. Now, if he doesn't think it's important, I can't imagine anybody there does.
Well, that's his opinion of his place, and I think that. But there are many
he doesn't
places.
Have a spouse either. That's a very good point. He died when he was very young, so he didn't have a spouse, or I don't even think he had much of a girlfriend when he died. So there was not a habitual way to relate to a spouse, that if you had people who had a long marriage and they got there, maybe it's just a way to continue their whole relationship for them to continue to have sex for a while, right? Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, except in my experience, people who've been married a long time tend not to have much sex.
Well, I suppose
it varies from individual to individual.
Yes, but we have young, gorgeous bodies, remember. And there's nothing else we have to do, so we don't get tired of a job or
the
demands of whatever we have going on in our lives.
I think you do whatever is interesting to you. That is essentially the bottom line. So if it's not interesting to him, he's in a place where the people are not interested in that, and that's what he would say. Others come through and they talk very much about the rather physical aspects of sex. So it's just different for different. There is a multiplicity.
In the early 20th century stuff, because there's another factor too, which you point out in astral intimacy, which is that many of these communications that arrived in the early part of the 20th century or somewhat before that are from people who had been, you know, they died in the latter part of the 19th century, perhaps. And back then, we don't have Let's just say there are a lot of moral strictures against even talking about sex or thinking about sex. I noticed,
yes,
too, in reading some of the what the people in your who were quoted in your book said, I recall the fact that the very word has changed in use. In the early part of the 19th century, and I think even into the latter part, the word sex referred was a way to refer to gender. It wasn't necessarily a way to refer to the act. So, for example, you would see in early 19th century fiction, you know, someone saying, oh, I don't even understand the sex. They are too complicated in what they think. He was talking about women. He wasn't talking about the act. So there seemed to be a little of that going on also in what you quoted. I love the fact you quote these people because it's not, Miles isn't putting himself in the way. He's saying, this is what they say. That is
That's
wonderful,
Miles. That's why I didn't
Miles.
Put my name on the front.
Is that why you didn't put your name on the front, because you had all these people who wrote it with you?
Right, because I didn't feel that I was really responsible for what's being said.
The compiler editor, bless you. Well, that's certainly a great deal of humility, my goodness. Your name is in tiny print on the back of the book.
Roberta, can I point out, too, what you were saying about the 18th century, 19th century, is very true of the mediums and the people who were at the seances who were recording this information.
Yeah.
They were fighting public opinion very strongly. They knew they were way out on a limb and that people were not going to believe them, people were going to laugh at them or whatever, or try to arrest them in some cases. So if something came through that did talk about sexual activity,
oh my goodness,
they weren't
scandal.
About to report it.
Yes. Yes. That's a very good point.
That would have doubled their problems.
It was hard enough to try to get people to understand that they were talking with the dead and it was a perfectly usual, normal thing to be doing. You're right. Compounding it if we have the dead in a very straight-laced Victorian era talking about sexual relations. So,
exactly.
As we boil it down, first let me talk a little bit about this vibration thing, because as you say, it's difficult for us to comprehend this. The dead describe it to some extent. Apparently, all energy vibrates. Energy by its nature vibrates. The only thing that really exists is energy. What we see around us is energy, but it takes a material form, which we can talk about in another podcast. But the energy levels above this one vibrate at a higher and higher rate. It still can appear as matter, but in essence, because it's energy, it's vibrating. And the higher and higher rates simply are a spectrum, and we, as we grow spiritually, develop the ability to exist ourselves at higher and higher vibratory rates. This was something that confused people in the early 20th century too, and when they were talking with the dead. And one of the dead, this was when electricity was new, one of the dead people said, look, it's like, think of a fan. If you have a fan and it's sitting there, you can see the blades. The reason you can't see us, even though we're in the same place, if you want to talk about place, is that just like if you turn that fan to the max, the blades disappear. You can't see them anymore because they're moving too fast. We're moving too fast for you to see us. Now, that stuck in my mind. I don't know if that's the reason why we can't see them, but it stuck in my mind as a possible explanation, an easy way to help people visualize the fact that they're here, but they're just vibrating higher. You hear it sometimes too in seances where they materialize. Their voices are higher. They sound like they're just, you know, a speeded up record or something. And they tell us they have to consciously slow their speech because their natural vibration is higher. I don't know if that helps, but if you're listening and still confused, contact me through robertagrimes.com and we can talk about it some more. It's important to understand that this is really what reality is. This is the nature of reality. So then let's summarize, Mal, what we learned about sex. First, we do have organs to do it. Second, there's no morality attached to it. And nobody looks at us askance if we want to practice it or don't want to practice it. That by itself is pretty liberating, I think. And third,
yeah,
there
I would go
this,
along with that in general, yeah.
And third, there is this body melding thing, because our bodies are energy there, somehow they can do it. And I've also had come across this and read about it, which is why one of the first things I did when I got your book was to open it to that spot and see if you were getting the same information I was, and you were. It always is. It's a big truth, but nobody violates the truth. They just have different aspects of it they talk about. But so there is this even great, if you could think of something better than an orgasm, you're looking forward to it because that's where you're going. There's something they do that's even better. But what may be even more amazing is they tell us there is the spiritual fulfillment that one can get as we advance spiritually is still greater than that.
In defense of the human body, I would like to say that if you look at it from one way, sex, even in the physical world, is a question of sort of emerging. Intimacy is what we're really seeking. I think sex is a a reflection, a pale shadow, if you will, of what we can do in the spirit world. And we're trying to sort of recreate it somewhat in the physical world. Of course, you can't be raped in the spiritual world. You can't,
right.
You know, you can't coerce
anyone. And you don't indulge in these things, I don't think, unless there is a simpatico. Have you ever read of pornography in the afterlife?
No.
All right. That to me is one of the differences. Here we have managed somehow in a way that makes no sense to divorce the physical act from the emotions that would be associated with that physical act. So I think that's one big change, one big difference too. But
yeah, and isn't that boring?
But I think one of the important takeaways from today is that even though you and I actually have never talked about these things, we've been separately ourselves doing this research. As is always true, I'm sure you find this too, when people who have done this research come together, they have slightly different takes maybe, but we all have reached the same conclusions.
I'm not an expert on anything. I'm not a experiencer either. I should have said at the beginning, I have never
neither
had.
Am I.
I have never had a paranormal experience worth mentioning. It just hasn't occurred to me. I am totally left-brained about this. This is all approached from a rational standpoint. This is evidence. This is proof or it isn't proof. And that's when people ask me, "Do you really believe in this stuff?" I'll say, no, I don't believe in it. I simply
know
that
it's true. Yes.
It's a fact. It isn't yes. Something you believe in or not. You believe in things because you don't have the facts. I've got the facts. It's true.
I have the same problem, Miles. I'm lousy at belief. It took me a long time to know the stuff that I know, but now I know it I'm as certain of it as I am of anything. That all of this is true. I'm sorry to step on your line, but I've said the same thing to people.
No.
Well, do you believe in that? I say, no, I know that. It's like, do you believe in the sun? Well, I can look out the window. There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and I should have talked sooner about these things because we really do agree. It's very exciting to me to see how, if someone who also has spent his life doing this, once again, I've found someone else who knows these things and has reached the same conclusions, and they're beyond exciting conclusions. I am so sorry that we have come to the end of our time, but we're going to do this again, you and I.
Okay, great. No, it was fun. Thank you.
One of the things I think it's wonderful for people to do who are interested in the afterlife is to get together with other people and hear from the experts. And the first conference that I was aware of in this field was put on by Terry Daniel about 4 years ago, I think. I was there. I loved it. It was terrific. And Terry's been doing this every year. Her afterlife conference is just not to be missed. And she's here to tell us a little about it. Terry, I'm so glad you're here. Tell us about this year's conference.
Okay, thank you, Roberta. This is our fifth year, And every year it gets bigger and better, and it also changes and evolves as we become more knowledgeable and bring in more tools and and more information, more research, more content. So this year we have John Holland is our featured medium, and he's actually going to be doing three different things. He's doing a four-hour pre-conference workshop on developing psychic abilities. And then he's doing his Saturday night keynote presentation where he'll be doing gallery-style readings with the audience. And he's also the guest of honor at a special VIP private party that we're having. So there's three opportunities to hang out with John Holland, which is wonderful. One thing we're doing this year that's brand new is we have an award that we're going to give out every year called the Afterlife Awareness Award for Excellence in Consciousness Studies. This is our first year doing that, and Raymond Moody is going to get the award, so he will be there.
Great choice.
Yeah, he's the obvious choice.
Perfect.
So he'll be there to get the award, and it will be presented to him by Eben Alexander. So we have those two on the stage together again. This is the fourth year for Raymond with us and the third year for Eben. We've got Suzanne Northrup, who is now our medium in residence. She's with us every year doing her amazing audience readings. A lot of mediums, but the thing that we're adding more and more of, which is the direction we're heading in, is a few years ago we started bringing in shamans and people who teach shamanism, because what shamans do and have done for 40,000 years is they travel to the other worlds. That's how they do their work. And traveling to the worlds where dead people are is a really important part of what shamans do. So we're bringing in shamanism education more and more each year to the conference.
Wow.
To teach journeying, to teach people how to journey out of the body. Oh, and speaking of that, we have William Bullman again from the Monroe Institute, who's a major out-of-body explorer. So we're really going into, you know, the out-of-body exploration from as many different traditions and cultures and types of practices as we can.
Wow. And where is this going to take place this year? I know you move around every year to give everybody a chance to attend.
This year, 2015, June 3rd through 7th, we're going to be in Norfolk, Virginia. And all the information is on our website, afterlifeconference.com. It's a pretty straight-ahead web address. And you can find it
afterlife.
All there.
Say it again. Say it again, Terry.
Afterlifeconference.com.
Okay, great. And everything is there, including how to sign up.
Everything is there, how to sign up, all the hotel information, all of that. We're also, because we're in Norfolk, where the Edgar Cayce Foundation is, they are one of our sponsors this year. And so we also have a Sunday afternoon post-conference excursion, a little tour of the Edgar Cayce Center, followed by dinner in a local restaurant. So, you know, all the fun starts on Thursday morning with the pre-conference workshops and goes through Sunday evening with our post-conference excursion and all the rest of the wonderful stuff in between.
That sounds wonderful. Terry has, I know, a history that starts with the loss of a child, which I think is a common story for people who start to get interested in the afterlife, a close-up tragic loss. But you've turned it into something so wonderful. You're really trying to help people triumph over their grief, which I think is great. That's terrific.
Well, thank you. I wouldn't call it triumphing over grief. I would call it using grief for something, you know, giving it purpose and meaning. Not, you don't really triumph over it. You fold it in to your reality. It, you know, it happens for a reason. Everything happens for a reason. And
true.
Traumatic things happen to expand us and move us somewhere else. And so, you know, that's our approach to grief work, is about where are we going to let this move us to, as opposed
to
many...
Yeah, you don't ever get over it, But once you make the kind of breakthrough you've made and you help others make, I think that you find purpose in your life again and move forward again, which is a real tribute to
or find purpose in your life perhaps for the first time. Think about that. For some people, they never had any purpose. And all of a sudden, that's given them purpose. And so metaphysically speaking, you look at the person who died, and instead of saying, I miss you, how can you leave me, I'm so sad, you say, wow, thank you for what you just gave me.
Oh,
and that's
that
a very different view.
It certainly is. Well, bless you, dear. I'm so glad that you're doing this, and I hope it's terrifically successful. And anybody who's interested, please go to the website afterlifeawareness.com and take a look, because I was, as I say, I was at the very first one, I'm proud to say, and it was wonderful. I'm sorry.
And there were only 100 people there that year, and we're expecting 450 this year.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
so
all right.
Well, it's quite a bit.
You'll make a lot of good friends as well, apparently. And we'll be talking for an hour in a few weeks with Terry, because I think her history is one that it would be wonderful for you to hear, and we'll hear more about the conference then. But meanwhile, consider yourself hugged, dear, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Roberta.
This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you understand fully what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're coming to understand about our one reality, such as that we can have sex in the afterlife, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just search there for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My own books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, and a number of novels. What's important to me today is that you just really understand, though, that Astral Intimacy by Miles Edward Allen, who is so modest he doesn't even put his name on his book, this is a great, great way to introduce yourself to what's true about eternal life, and I really urge you to read his book. You'll find details about my books, though, and also be able to contact me if you'd like at robertagrimes.com. Our guest next week is Karen Herrick. Karen is a therapist who specializes in healing childhood traumas, and especially childhood traumas caused by things like parental alcoholism. She has helped me quite a bit. I'm a survivor of a childhood with an alcoholic, and so she's wonderful at what she does. She's just written a really beautiful children's book to help us explain to our little ones what's going on, and we're going to be talking about that primarily. Don't miss it. Our guest today has been the wonderful, extraordinary Miles Edward Allen. Now that you know that we even have sex in heaven, and there are no morality issues to it, and there's even something better than sex in heaven, isn't it time that you started learning just how much fun the afterlife reality is going to be? For now, though, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.